Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
He comes to punish her with the words, "Have you prayed tonight?" And said, "Yes, I have prayed." "Okay, because you need it."
From WQXR and the Metropolitan Opera, this is Aria Code. I'm Rhiannon Giddens.
You can hit him with a knife, you can drop swords on his head, you can rain fire down on him, you can break all of his limbs, but don't touch his heart.
My mission? Break down one famous aria so you can hear it with fresh ears.
I think the first thing I would do if Othello came into my office overwhelmed with jealousy is to validate the way he feels.
On this episode of Aria Code, Dio mi potevi scagliar. It translates as, "God, you could have thrown every evil at me." And it's the big moment from Othello, which is how us opera folks say Othello, because it's Verdi's Italian adaptation of the Shakespearean tragedy. Okay, so here's my confession. These are the things I've been jealous of this week alone. People with cheap car insurance. A good friend of mine who happens to be in the Met Opera Chorus, who is an amazing knitter, better than I will ever, ever be. And this guy on YouTube who can play the piano with his toes. Jealousy isn't choosy, you know? Shakespeare called it a green-eyed monster. Anytime you have something you care about, something you're scared you might lose, everywhere you turn, there it is. Staring you down with those unblinking green eyes, licking its chops. Now, the most popular fictional story about jealousy is Shakespeare's Othello. It's the play where he coined that phrase, the green-eyed monster, and it's inspired lots of adaptations. I mean, there's even a popular board game named after it, a board game that I couldn't play anymore because I kept beating my mother at it. But today we're going to take a close listen to Verdi's version, and I want to zero in on one aria in particular, Dio mi potevi scagliar. Now, this is the aria Othello sings after he's been convinced that his beloved wife, Desdemona, cheated on him. She didn't, but Othello's been hearing otherwise. One of his most trusted soldiers, Iago, is moonlighting as an evil mastermind. You gotta have a side hustle, you know. And he hatches a plan to take down Othello. Dio mi potevi scagliar is the moment when the green-eyed monster just about devours him. I wanted to know more about how Verdi captured this monster moment with his music, so I asked three brilliant non-monsters to take apart Dio mi potevi scagliar.
Okay, sì.
The first is Placido Domingo.
Othello helped me for everything. As an artist, as a singer, certainly Othello has a special place in my heart.
Yes, that Placido Domingo. Happened to be my favorite singer.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Shakespeare scholar Virginia Mason Vaughan.
Both the play and the opera open up an opportunity to talk about men and women, about power, about a race, and the way we treat each other.
Cognitive psychologist and author of The Jealousy Cure, Dr. Robert Leahy.
I think one of the reasons we connect to the aria is that we can imagine ourselves being in a position where somebody we love has been unfaithful to us.
And director of the recent Delacorte Theater production of Othello, Ruben Santiago Hudson.
I thought that everything in the play was provoked by a strong and infinite love, and that was the catalyst for everything that went wrong.
Actor Justin Cunningham reads a translation of the aria, which unfolds in three sections. First, Othello pleads to God. Then he thinks about the agony of losing Desdemona. And finally, he decides to kill the person he loves most in the world. And then himself. You know, the kind of light comedy you would expect when opera meets Shakespeare. All right, let's do this. Dio mi potevi scagliar from Verdi's Othello.
God, you could have hurled at me all evils of misery, of shame. You could have made all my triumphs rubble, lies.
The first part of the aria really indicates the despair that Othello feels. He's talking to God and praying to God and hoping that this despair could be relieved.
And this is one of the special moments in this opera because it is monotonal. There are two notes. He starts with Dio mi potevi scagliar tutti i mali della miseria, della vergogna. He's really asking to God, why? You can give me the worst thing and I will accept it. I will accept it. E rassegnato al volere del cielo. Anything you want, God.
He would be willing to give up everything that he has and has been if only this is not true.
You can hit him with a knife, you can drop swords on his head, you can rain fire down on him, you can break all of his limbs, but don't touch his heart.
I think Verdi was attracted to Othello because the poetry in it is really natural for an aria. You might even call them verbal arias. Othello has some absolutely magnificent speeches where he expresses his love for Desdemona and then the anger and turmoil that he feels after he's convinced his wife is unfaithful really shows the anguish of a soul torn.
But oh, tears. Oh, sorrow. The vision has been wrenched from me, to which I would turn to joyfully to comfort my soul. Extinguished is that sun, that smile, that ray that made me alive, that gave me happiness.
He's talking about the smile of Desdemona that is now completely doesn't exist anymore, spento. Spento means either dead or something that doesn't have any more light.
In the second part of the aria, he realizes that, as he believes, that she's been unfaithful and that there's no way that he can get beyond that. Her infidelity has extinguished his entire life, which he believes has been shattered forever.
Sexual jealousy is definitely a major motif running through the play and one of the things that affects Othello.
And jealousy makes you sit in the corner and just, you know, put your head in your hand and just shake your head and can't go on. You don't want to get up. You don't want to eat. You don't want to sleep. You don't want to do anything. You can't.
I think that jealousy we have all feel, you know, but I mean, it is, you have to analyze, you have to study the situation and, I mean, and you are a civil person, you know, I mean, so you are not going to, not going to kill anybody, you know.
Jealousy is universal. And I mean, we could see this in animals. I mean, they've actually done research. We're asking pet owners about how jealous your pet is. Dogs rank number one, horses number two. Cats are a little bit farther down on the hierarchy of jealousy, probably because they're independent.
Shakespeare called jealousy the green-eyed monster. In a lot of ways, I think, because green means it goes on, it lives, it grows. Green penetrates, and jealousy is ferocious and fierce, and it just penetrates you.
But what causes that jealousy? It's the claim that his wife has slept with a young white man.
So jealousy is an emotion that's evolved to protect genetic investment. Men, for example, are much more likely to feel jealous about sexual infidelity on the part of their partner, because the man never really knows if the baby is his baby, whereas the woman always knows it's her baby.
But I think it also has to do with his own insecurity as a black man in a white society. He's not of Venice. He's a hired mercenary. He's given great place and honor, and they need him for their military protection against the Turkish Empire.
They make sure that he understands he's an outsider. Of course he's aware of it. He looks in the mirror every day, but he's comfortable where he is. They try to make him uncomfortable, and they do.
So the cultural context makes him feel like an outsider and, in a sense, threatens the very sense of his identity as a successful, masculine warrior. That makes Othello particularly vulnerable to jealousy.
This is a man that does not know defeat. He knows victory. He's royal from royal blood in Africa. He's got the most beautiful wife that anyone could ever dream of having. He has one of the most powerful positions. He's one of the most noble individuals in the community. And for the first time in his life, he faces defeat. But what's most rare is it's not physical. It's in his heart. He lost the most sacred thing he had.
But you, oh mild one, pious eternal spirit with the rosy smile, cover your holy face with the horrid mask of hell.
And then he starts blaspheming, said, da nazione, she will confess and after I will kill her. I want the proof. And then, heavens, oh gioia.
He's at the point of no return, and he's overwhelmed. And the only alternative that seems reasonable to him, that seems to make any sense, is to seek revenge.
He thinks he has to punish her because of the hate of Iago and all the poison in his heart. And there is nothing else he can do.
Othello is absolutely convinced that Desdemona has been unfaithful, and it's shaken him to the core. His relationship with her is become his whole identity, and now it is destroyed. It is torn apart. And you can see his grief and anguish.
I think the first thing I would do if Othello came into my office and overwhelmed with jealousy is to validate the way he feels. In other words, try to find the truth of what that feels like for him. Not to say that it's true that Desdemona is cheating on him, but to say that I understand how horrible, how overwhelming that feeling is.
He just totally unravels and actually, in my opinion, goes mad. You know how people talk about temporary insanity. I don't know if it's temporary or it's going to be forever. But he goes mad because he has the wound that cannot heal. It's the wound of love. He doesn't give it the time to heal. He does something drastic.
It also, of course, has to do with the attitudes towards female sexuality from Shakespeare's day, and I'm sorry to say, well into our own. A woman who has committed adultery is worthy of terrible, terrible punishment, and the notion that somehow the husband or the partner owns that woman's sexuality. And I think that's one of the things that makes Othello a harder play to put over today, certainly in the era of Me Too.
But it's interesting that he actually wants her to confess, that he wants her to pray so that he doesn't kill her soul.
He comes to punish her with the words, "Have you prayed tonight?" And said, "Yes, I have prayed." "Okay, because you need it." But immediately it comes the oboe with a sadness line. And then he sees Desdemona, e tu come sei pallida. In that moment, I feel like a lullaby, like embracing her, and almost think that she's not dead.
Sotto maligna.
And at the moment, I say, Desdemona, Desdemona, calling her like she's going to answer me.
Desdemona.
And then with a tremendous strength.
Morta, morta.
Ah, morta, morta, dead, dead.
No, Othello tries to do the most heinous crime in the world, murder, with nobility. Murder is murder. Death is death. You only can do it once it's done. But he contradicts himself the whole way. He said, I don't want to break a limb in this little bird. I don't want a feather to be out of place, but I have to kill you. I have to do this. And when it's done, I'm going to kill me, and then we'll meet in heaven, and none of these distractions will be here. He's trying to find a place of peace. That's the best way I could put it.
I have a fantasy that someday Othello will be so unrelatable that nobody will understand what it means. And that would be a world in which there was absolutely no racism, no discrimination on the basis of color or physical characteristics, and that men and women were entirely equal, and men did not feel like they had any ownership over women's sexuality. And therefore, the play would be totally incomprehensible.
Othello ends in E major, the tonality, Mi maggiore. And I think it was the last performance of Othello I did at the Met. I noticed something. Strange enough, when I was lying dead near Desdemona, the curtain of the Metropolitan, it has a sound, and it was the E note. So it was like closing the the performance with the right chord, you know.
Well, it's Rhiannon here, and that was a totally chill Placido Domingo. Shakespeare scholar Virginia Mason Vaughn, psychologist Robert Leahy, and director Ruben Santiago Hudson decoding Dio mi potevi scagliar from Verdi's Otello. You also heard actor Justin Cunningham reading a translation of this aria. He recently played the role of Othello, and since this is an audio show, I'll let you in on a secret. He's black. Now, casting a black man to play an African Moor may seem like a totally obvious decision, but it's actually a fairly recent phenomenon. For a long time, actors and singers playing this role would have been white men in blackface. Now, that's makeup to make them appear dark, for those of you who don't know. It was often either shoe polish or burnt cork. All right, stay with me here for a minute, because this might get a little academic, but it's something I've thought about a lot, and I just want to share it with you. So here we go. In opera, you just can't cast for the look. It all starts with the voice, because not every singer can sing every role. And of course, the whole point of theater is that people pretend to be someone they're not. They wear costumes. They put on accents. They're playing a 15-year-old, but they're really 40. You know, all those things. It's not real, and we know it. So a lot of people say, well, if you put blackface on a white man playing Othello, well, it's just a costume. It's just makeup. Stop being so sensitive. But it's not that simple, because blackface has its own history and it has its own implications. The fascination with African modes of speech and music, they didn't start with Vanilla Ice, believe me. Composers were writing negrillos and morescas, madrigals, mocking brown people, all the way back in the Renaissance. It was used in minstrel shows, where black people were lampooned and turned into caricatures. You can't disentangle blackface from Western colonialism and racism. I mean, that's just a fact. We can't just say it's a costume and leave it at that. Because when we see a white man in blackface, whether we know it or not, We're tapping into traditions that are so deep in our collective psyche that we sometimes don't even know they're there. I'd say we often don't know they're there. And so we're never really just seeing a white man in a costume. We're seeing a very complicated history, too. But I hope we can keep talking about it. I hope that more people can see why this issue is deeper than it might seem. And I, for one, am happy that a tenor can now approach Otello without having to pick up that makeup box that says Otello Brown. I ain't making that up. See how much we can learn from one little song? Now we're ready to listen to Dio mi potevi scagliar in its entirety, performed by Placido Domingo and the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra.
Thank you.
I really don't want to say anything after listening to that, but I have to, so I will say that that was Plácido Domingo singing Dio mi potevi scagliar from Verdi's Otello. And that's it for this episode of Aria Code. Join me next episode to hear three great artists talk about what it means to devote their lives to music.
Perhaps more than any other aria ever written in the history of opera, Vici d'Arte symbolizes the struggle of being an artist and the kind of chaotic relationship between, you know, living in one's imagination and in this sort of mystical world of creation and then, you know, facing real life.
This show is a co-production of WQXR and the Metropolitan Opera. Our producer is Marin Lazian, and Brendan Francis Noonan is our editor. Matt Abramovitz is our executive producer. Sound design by Matt Boynton and original music by Hannes Brown. Our team also includes Anya Jeschik, Krista Ripple, and Ricardo Quiñones. Special thanks to Plácido Domingo, Virginia Mason Vaughn, Robert Leahy, and Ruben Santiago Hudson for their insights about Dio mi potevi scagliar from Verdi's Otello. I'm Rhiannon Giddens. See you next time. And muta shakira. That's Arabic for thank you.